My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself. Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills. Accelerate your team's impact. And redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about the Civil War ghosts of Georgia with author Courtney McInvale. Thinking of the women going out looking for their loved ones, that just makes me think of the whole story that I think there's a version of it. Every community has it, like the woman in white who's out looking for her husband. But I could see that in these battlefields being true. I could see that there would be actual ghosts and spirits of women still there looking for their husbands.
There notably is a lady in white at Chickamauga Battlefield in Northwest Georgia, and she is doing just that. No, notably, there is the lady in white. She's at Chickamauga. She is by the Wilder Tower. Now, people were confused about her because they thought that the widow Glenn, who lived there, might be the ghost. But the widow Glenn's husband died in a different battle months preceding the battle at Chickamauga. But this woman still appears in that area, looking out from the woods, peering at the men, sometimes calling out for help. And they have sort of just deduced that she was one of the women that came to find one of her loved ones on the battlefield, and she never found him and is still looking for him. And I asked the park rangers there and at the national parks, they have to be very careful about saying anything's paranormal. But I said, are you familiar with the Lady in White legend? And they said, that's one of the oldest legends ever recorded at Chickamauga.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was one of the originals.
So that doesn't, you know, that seems like not necessarily legend, that maybe she's actually really been seen.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, my favorite body retrieval story, which is a strange thing to have multiple of, but I do. But my favorite one, or at least at the top of the list, comes from the Atlanta campaign. And there was a young boy from a Jackson family who lived in North Georgia, and he went off to battle in Resaca, and he didn't come home. He died. And his father wanted to bring his body home. This is, you know, Victorian era. We need to bring people to peace. And their biggest fear was dying away from home. So he gathers one of the other soldiers that survived the battle, and they go out to the battlefield and they look for him. They're unable to find him in the places that the other soldier remembered. So he goes home pretty disheartened, but he wakes up in the middle of the night because he feels someone touching him. And he looks next to his bed and he sees his son, who definitely looks injured. But he says, you know, Father, the Yankees moved me under this mound and I'm underneath this pokeberry bush. Please go find me there and bring me back to mother. And he goes back the next day with that other soldier, and they find that mound and they find that pokeberry bush, and they find remains underneath. But they're so decomposed, he's not certain it's his son until he sees the shoes. And those are the shoes he handed him the day before he walked off to battle. So he knows it's his son and he brings him home.
Oh.
So that to me is a story of bringing someone home, but also, you know, a ghost or a spirit, if you will, mm-hmm. helping in that process.
And, you know, on those battlefields too, you would think every one of them, even like where these housing developments have been built, that there had to have been people left behind, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, just a few years, I believe, that in Chancellorsville, they found a foot in a boot, you know, near where someone was building a property. And in the 90s in Gettysburg, someone was building a house and they found, you know, a full set of human remains. It's very common because a lot of people were put in shallow graves or brought to local farms and the farmers let them be buried there. And not everyone was retrieved. There were 640,000 casualties in 4 years. Not everyone was retrieved.
Right. And one thing that you said about in the chapter on Chickamauga, you said the smell of death can never leave a place. Mm-hmm. That kind of really stuck with me. And then you said, even nature remembers.
They do, yeah.
That really stuck with me. Because when something like that happens on the land, how does it ever go away?
It doesn't, right? They still have smells there at Chickamauga of blood and gunfire. They still have the smells of decomposing remains that they said, you know, wild hogs brought around and everything like that. In addition to that, there's in Andersonville, Georgia, which is further south, a prison site where Union soldiers were imprisoned. And they tell me, I talked to the locals there. It's an interesting little community. They said that every year around the summer, when a lot of those men died, the vultures still come and sit and wait, as if like their ancestral vultures told them that death is at this place.
I don't know how that knowledge gets passed on from one bird
and
generation
creepy,
to the next.
Right? It was just 1 year. It was 13,000 people that year. It's a lot of people, but they still there. And they sent me pictures. They're like, look here, come. They send me pictures. Here are the vultures. Yeah. I put one of those pictures of the vultures on the water tower down there in Andersonville. That'll be in book two. But it's really, it's fascinating.
And you and your husband stayed near the site of the Battle of Chickamauga. And you had an experience there.
Oh my gosh. I just stayed there again. I loved it so much. And it was so haunted. It was great. we stayed at this beautiful home, on Little Road, which if you're there, there's literally only a little railroad line that separates the home from the battlefield. So if we walk out, 20 feet, we're in battlefield property, it's great. And when I saw that was available for rent, my little history ghost loving heart went right for it. Right. So we stayed there. And it was a beautiful home. It's beautifully done. That's another reason I go back to it. The owners are fantastic. And I'm giving away my secret. They're always booked. And I'm like, no, I tell them this is going to be my second home. So it's my secret. But we go in there and the first night, like we got in kind of late, so we didn't really explore. We just checked out the house and went to bed in one of the bedrooms. And we shut the door. And she had left a note, the owner did, saying, you can put on the fire if you want to, but it was warm. I mean, for us, it was like 70 degrees. We're from Connecticut. We're like, we don't need a fire. This is beautiful. So we go to bed. And then in the middle of the night, I wake up, which I'm very light sensitive. I'm like a vampire, right? And I saw that there was a glowing light around the bedroom door. And I elbowed my husband. I said, go see what that light is. I'm scared.
Right.
I'm the ghost lady, but I'm like, go find out what that is. Right. We're in a strange place. So he opens the door and the fireplace is roaring. He's like, Courtney, look. And I said, well, put it out, turn it off, do what you need to do. I don't know why it's on. And so he does. And then we go back to sleep thinking that was just strange or, maybe the gas lines had to have the air released. I don't know. We came up with a bunch of excuses, right? So we go back to bed. Then the next morning I wake up and another fireplace is on. And when I walk into the room, it immediately shuts off. And I said to my husband, that fireplace was on. He said, well, it's not on now. And he put his hand up against the front of it. And he said, oh my gosh, it's radiating heat. I said, yeah, I told you it was just on. The owners told us that this was not supposed to happen. These fireplaces do not do that. I was intrigued. And I put on a spirit box device that sweeps through radio stations to generate white noise so spirits can communicate. And a voice came through and kept saying, it's so cold. It's so cold. And I thought, okay, interesting. It's not cold. I can't imagine it was cold in September in Georgia when the battle happened, but we made note of it. And then we went out to the battlefield to finally explore. And we stood by this site, not far from where Lincoln's Confederate brother-in-law was killed. And there was a plaque, and it talked about how cold, unseasonably, extremely cold it was the night between the 2 days of battle at Chickamauga, and how the men weren't allowed to start fires because they were sleeping so close to the enemy they would be found, and how they were shivering and struggling. And I just got the biggest chills when I read that, because I thought, oh my word, they're putting on the fire. They're trying to tell me, or it's as if it's still happening in, you know, 1863. They're still so cold. It was, you know, such a fascinating experience to have there.
And there was another experience that you had, and it was, is it New Hope Church?
Yeah.
That you went there with your family?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, was there battle? There was a battle near that site.
There was a battle in New Hope Church. New Hope Church is mostly developed now, but there's these trenches that remain and a little parcel of battlefield right next to the church. So they would name battles after what was there. And there was a church in New Hope. And this was around the same time as the Battle of Pickett's Mill. Sherman's coming into Georgia. Destruction's happening. Ambrose Bierce of the Union Army is so upset about Pickett's Mill at this time that he's trying to charge Sherman with war crimes. Things are getting bloody. Things are getting brutal. But at New Hope Church, they are engaged in this hand-to-hand combat in the pouring rain and a thunderstorm that opened up over them. And they're all following into this muddy trench that they called the Hell Hole. I didn't know much more than that when I went. When I went with my cousins, we started getting some EMF fluctuations, you know, could be anything. And then I kept seeing a shadow figure sort of standing by the trench. One of my cousins, he's like, I'll go down there and see, you know, if you can pick anything up. And so I held out this sort of thermal camera and I saw him walk down there and I told him, you know, where I had seen the shadow. He didn't see it. He sort of said he felt watched from the woods. It was creepy that night. And when I held my thermal camera, I could see my cousin. And then I could see the shape of someone else behind the tree who had moved to the side when he went down there, even though no one had been down there. And at the moment I noticed this on my thermal camera, the sky just starts pouring rain and a thunderstorm opens up. And we all run to our cars and we look at the radar and nothing's showing up. As we were running to the car, I took one more picture and you can see the shadow figure standing in the back of the pouring raindrops. And I went on to research New Hope Church, and they consistently have a residual energy, they believe, or a haunting, where storms open up over those trenches in New Hope Church. And even in the 1970s, a plane was flying over there, and a thunderstorm came out of nowhere, and the plane crashed right next to the battlefield, and people died. So that residual energy from that conflict is still causing literally, you know, weather pattern changes. It's wild.
I have never heard of anything like that.
No, I had neither. I had neither.
And especially to the point like a plane crashed.
A plane crashed right outside it and people died in that crash.
Wow. And another thing I found real interesting, I've always been kind of intrigued, fascinated, and confused by Civil War reenactors. And with all respect to people who do it, I just personally don't understand it because it seems so tragic and I don't understand why you want to reenact that. But yeah, to each his own, right?
I've met a lot of them. They're very lovely people. And I think this is their way of remembering and honoring them and letting them know that we know what they did. You know, That's they take it very seriously, and they want to make sure that they do justice, at least the ones I have met. And reenactors have some of the best ghost stories, too.
That's what I found really interesting, where, you know, these reenactors would go out. There was a group that were out the night before, and, you know, they're in their little camp. They see other people camping. And yeah, they see their fire, yeah, so they go over and talk to them. And then later there's nobody there.
Yeah, and they even check on them. They're like, we were friends. We had a good conversation, you know? I think they maybe even remarked they were very in character, you know? One reenactor, he was messing with a guy he thought was another reenactor from the opposing side, you know, brain farting which is which. And you know, he points his gun at him and he's like, come out, you know, with your hands up. And of course, these are reproductions. They're not firing them. And the man was very scared and he tried to surrender and he ran off and he vanished. And it wasn't until that moment that the man realized that this was not a reenactor that he spooked. This was, you know, a spirit who thought he was a real, you know, soldier.
And I personally think that would be a lot to deal with. If I was the reenactor, I think I would feel some guilt, like, wait, can we do this over? I'm just pretending.
I was horrified.
I'm just a regular guy.
For that. Yeah, you know, I think he probably was too. I don't think it was ill-intended.
No, but not at all.
You know, my goodness. Yeah.
But to think that you terrified a spirit who is already, like, traumatized
while he was
on this earth, like, horrifically traumatized.
And that's an intriguing story, too, because that's a different type of haunting. If that spirit, you know, if this story is accurately, you know, told, that spirit mustn't know they're dead. They must be still living in that battle somewhere in time. And that sort of engages with me, like, is this time slip thing in events that are so huge possible? That there's a veil between times more than between worlds. It's interesting.
That's deep.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm weird like that. I go,
no, but
far.
It's true. It's true. Cause you got me thinking about that. And when I was reading the book
it's just something that the more time I spend there, it's something that comes to mind as possible.
And do you feel like most of these, between even the Revolutionary battle sites, the Civil War battle sites that you've been to, do you feel, because you have the ability, your superpower, to feel more than most of us, do you feel that most of them have that energy left behind and spirits are still left behind? Is there any that you've came across where you kind of felt more a sense of peace even?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So there are not actually as many spirits where I feel that they are just left behind, you know, Ghost Whisperer edition, someone crossed them into the light. I don't encounter that much. I think if we do encounter spirits, they're either still in that battle, maybe they don't realize they're dead, maybe it's the time thing, or, you know, they have a place of significance, like where they lost their life, that they maybe visit, or that draws mm-hmm. their energy back in, or they know when people are coming to visit them and honor them. That's something that I encounter a lot more than a restless soul. And I tell people, it's like, you know, if you bring flowers to your grandmother's grave, you feel like she knows that you did that. It's why you do that for her. And in that moment, you might feel her watching, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think she's always there. You don't think she's just standing there day and night waiting for you to come bring flowers once a year. You know, I don't think that of these soldiers all the time. I think they know when we're coming to honor them, to talk of them, to learn from them, and they can make themselves present then. But there are places, and it can be Pickett's Charge at Gettysburg. It can be the Bloody Lane at Antietam. It can be, you know, all sorts of where these deadliest things happen, where when I'm there, it's hard to discern between residual and active, but you feel so much agony and and sorrow that it's hard to sort of wrap your mind around what you're experiencing in those places where the most casualties and the most fear happened. Mm-hmm. It's not a clear-cut answer. So some do have peace. Some do communicate. Some are remembered. Some do come back. But some, are they stuck in time? Are they still in that moment? Are they needing assistance? I think there's a mix.
Do you have a story as you were researching this and going to the various locations? Is there a story that happened that really stuck with you? One of your favorite, I don't want to even use that word, favorite stories. just something that really moved you that you experienced when researching this book?
It's hard to pick favorites because I love them all so much. In Antietam, I had an encounter where General Mansfield intelligently answered me about where he was shot. I also, at Antietam, caught EVPs of boys calling out for their mothers, which broke my heart. So there's a lot of things like that that I think really move me. But one of the things in my research that really, and maybe this is because I love animals, but there's a regiment from Georgia, the Troop Artillery, actually, and they had this story that just I gravitated to. And I think that this is the story of an animal spirit guide, and perhaps was one that just made me feel like there's hope and there's goodness and there's guardian angels, no matter what we're going through. But these men mustered out, and when they were mustering out into Virginia and they were training there, they had this little ugly dog, they said, came into their camp. He didn't even have a tail. He was a mutt, and he loved them. And they adopted him. They fed him supper. They took him everywhere. They wrote of how he would hunt for them and bring food when some of them were starving, how he would be at the front lines dodging bullets. He was riding the cannons into Maryland. He was their companion for the entirety of the war. His name was Charlie. They loved Charlie so very much. And they said he belonged to them all. And then in Petersburg, even after the surrender at Appomattox, which is the end, and there's just little skirmishes going on, Charlie's sleeping under a tree and a piece of shrapnel kills Charlie. And it broke my heart to read that, but they buried him with full military honors. Uh-huh. They wrote him a 3-page obituary in the paper. The soldiers did. And the veterans never forgot that he was their guardian. And they had one of the lowest casualty rates for all the regiments of Georgia. And I think of that dog as their guardian angel. And he came right when they needed him. And he left right when they didn't need him anymore. And that to me was one of the most touching stories. And when I read that, I cried at my desk for a long time. I had to walk away, and I just thought, as I was reading about those veterans getting older and each of them dying, I thought, you know, who was there for each of them when they came over, just like he was first in each state, was Charlie, you know, and yeah. He was back with his family. And to me, that is a true spiritual story too. And that touched all my heartstrings.
Anytime you put a dog into a story, I get all emotional.
Yeah.
You know, It's like we're talking about these young boys basically dying, and then I get teared up over the dog too.
I get teared up about the boys too, but there was just something about that, knowing that they had a friend and that they had love and that they loved him. That to me, and stories of men from the other side, you know, that are in my book helping each other on the battlefields. And even though they're on opposing sides, they see each other. They see humanity in each other. They care for each other. Those are the stories to me that will always stay in my heart.
So this is volume one. Now, when you were researching the book, did you just do all of the research for both volumes? Because I know there's going to be another one.
And to be honest, I put together a mammoth manuscript. And my publisher said, we have to break this into two books. And so we went back and forth and decided that volume one will be Battlefields and Regiments, and volume two will be Men of War, some men that I kind of did many biographies on, and also Sites and Legends. So everything from mysterious train wrecks to the missing Confederate gold and the capture of Jefferson Davis, all these things in Georgia. And the Men of Note will be in volume two. And volume one are the battlefields in Georgia and the regiments and their experiences in Georgia, but also in Gettysburg, Antietam, Chancellorsville, and beyond.
Now, since you've written already about the Revolutionary War, this will be book two on the Civil War. Is there anything else that you want to write about? Do you have any, your sights set on anything else?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny. I'm so steeped now in the Civil War. Now when I go places, everyone's like, when are you doing us? And so
oh, true.
I feel like for me, I have a Union state. I have a Confederacy. I would love to do a split state. And I spend a lot of time in Maryland. There's a lovely town called Sharpsburg where the Battle of Antietam was. And they've almost like adopted me as one of their own. And they're like, you have to write a Maryland book. And so they've pretty much got me cornered on that right now, that I have to do a Maryland one. So I changed publishers because when I started writing about the Civil War, I wrote too much. And there's a lovely man, Mike Ricksecker, and he runs Haunted Road Media. And he said, you know what, Courtney, I'll take it. And he's fantastic. He's kind of, you know, this wonderful independent publisher. For me, it was really a learning curve too, because going from a publisher that was smaller books and a bigger thing, there's a lot more work to do on my end. So these books come with, you know, I didn't know on my first one. So I tell people it's raw and unedited. It's being revised for Connecticut. You know, Georgia, I spent months just editing and reworking and things. So it's a lot of work that goes into them. So I could see myself doing this for the rest of my life. But, you know, the Civil War thing, I've thought about other things too. You know, some of the other haunted towns I research, some folks have asked if I'll write about my experiences growing up, but for me, that's so personal. I'm not sure that I will. So for now it's going to stick with, you know, war history and going forward that way and see where the road leads.
And when does the next volume come out?
It's actually going to come out right before the holidays. So we're looking around December 12th is a release date for volume two.
So do you want to circle back and we do this again?
I would love to.
That would be so awesome to talk about the next one. I'll look forward to reading that. Because it's really, for someone who's interested like me, I'm a history buff. I'm fascinated and horrified and interested in the Civil War. There's a lot of different feelings. But I'm also very interested in paranormal, obviously. And so it's for someone, if you're interested in the Civil War and you're interested in the paranormal and kind of how the two things go together, it's a fascinating read, the way you've woven it together.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And I think, you know, I try to do them justice. The people of the 1800s, they believed in the supernatural. They believed in souls, and they did a lot of documenting about that, and that helps me out a lot.
Every time I've been to a place that, you know, a battlefield, I don't have the superpower that you have, but I get very emotional. And
yeah, you pick up on it. Like everyone has an intuition and their body alerts them to energies. And so it's impossible for us not to feel something in these places, you know?
And so many people have reported the things that you report on in there, like hearing things, hearing voices, seeing lights. You know, there's just so many stories like that, that there has, you know, it's not just a coincidence.
No, it's not. And, you know, I recently went to Gettysburg in September, and I when I tell you, I heard drumming. And it was so real. I was certain there were reenactors there. Now, why my rational brain didn't say, Courtney, a thunderstorm's about to open up and it's sunset. There's not reenactors standing out here. I don't know. But I'm putzing about the wheat field like a dope, just listening to the drums going, this is cool, right? And then they stop And as I get further into the wheat field, I notice there are no reenactors. I'm the only person there. Me, my husband, and my friend, really, were the only people. And I said, I bet those were ghost drums. And I effing missed it, you know? I was so pissed at myself. And I said, can you play the drums again? And then I thought... Then I thought, it's a residual haunting, Courtney. It's energy. Like, good luck to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I just walked around with my phone on and prayed that something would happen. Some moments pass, minutes pass. I'm still out there. You just see in my video, it's footage of wheat. And then the drums came back. And I got it on camera. And I was, you know, I was so happy. But I went and realized, even though I've been researching this war for years now, that the moment the drums began was the hour the battle began. The moment the second drums came was when the death march came, when that part of the battle ended. That's why it's another kind of like check on the time theory for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I definitely, yeah, I got that video of the drums and it's like my sacred video now, like I'm obsessed. But it's just crazy and fascinating. And no matter how long I do it, I continue to have these experiences, and it's not the same anytime.
And that wraps up our conversation about the Civil War Ghosts of Georgia with author Courtney McInvale. You can get the book on Amazon or wherever books are sold, and you can get more information about Courtney at her website, Courtney McInvale, that's McInvale.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. You could also sign up on patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.